Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today's interview is going to be with Linda Christina Riedemann, who was the producer of The Wind Phone, which you probably should know won a whole bunch of prizes, including the Grand Jury Prize at Film Invasion Los Angeles in 2019 for Best Short Film. But honestly, I can't even name all the awards it won at that festival because I think it was six, and why give you a list of six awards? But anyhow, The Wind Phone is one of the best short films made in 2019, for sure. It came close to being on the short list for the Oscar for Best Short Film. It didn't make it, which is, as always, more proof that the Academy is, let's not call it a joke, but let's just say, you know, the Oscars were invented to promote Hollywood movies, and that's what they do. So The Wind Phone is not out there for you to watch yet. It's not online, so I'm not going to urge you to watch it before you listen to this interview. I could go on and on about how great The Wind Phone is, but there's really no point. As soon as it's available online, if you go to discoveryindiefilm.com, there will be links to it. But I shouldn't keep talking. Instead, I should just let you hear from Linda.
How I ended up in this crazy business.
Yes.
In the first place.
Yes, how you ended up far from home in this crazy town, in this crazy business.
Yeah. Oh, totally indirectly, actually. I mean, I grew up in Austria. I was there until I was 18 and finished school. I didn't really grow up with film and TV. My parents, they watched like TV, but more, you know, like a local crime series in the evening and the news, like that kind of thing. They're like far from cinephiles. I was more encouraged to read and play outside and do a lot of things that I think in the long run now, like now that I think back on it, was really great because it sort of stirred my imagination in ways that just watching things sometimes doesn't, but had no connection to film, really. It was just something that, you know, going to theater was very rare. And so when I went, I always had this very strong reaction to movies and I thought it was amazing and it was something special. And we went maybe three times a year to go a movie in a theater. And it was always like a field trip. Like it was always like a birthday or something, just something special. And so I always saw it as, just something very unique and unattainable because LA is so far away and the film industry, and you kind of get the sense that you have to be a famous actor or director to even be in it. But that was something I marveled at, but never actually considered as a career because it is so far removed from anything I knew. But I was always really good in school. I wanted to get out into the world. I wanted to learn English perfectly. And so when I graduated high school, I went to do a gap year. And at first, like everyone goes to be a nanny usually. And that was the number one, you know, first like goal or thought. But then a professor of mine, my math professor, who kind of picked up on me wanting to do something bigger that goes beyond just like the small town. She suggested that I go to a school here or not even necessarily here, but she was like, go to a school in the U.S., instead of being a nanny, you'll meet people your
age. So enroll in college here?
It was just for a gap year. So she was suggesting go to a high school because she knew another, young woman who had done that, and had a really amazing experience. And so she floated this by me and I was like, well, that sounds great. I don't have to work. I can go to school. I can meet people my age. And without much pressure of grades. And so, yeah, so then we started. So my parents, you know, at first were like, well, we're, no, you're not going to make money. We're going to pay money for this. But eventually, like,
because the nanny model is you get a year abroad and you break even or come out a little ahead.
Exactly.
With free room and board. Yeah.
Exactly. That's the idea. And instead, I was like, hey, like, can you pay for the school for me to go?
Pay for me to have my second senior year. Yeah.
Basically. But they have also always been super supportive of education. And so they saw that just having that opportunity to learn in a different school model and maybe do things that I wasn't able to do in Austria, like, is an opportunity. And my mom's friend is the head of a international, like a department at a big international company in my hometown. And he had an employee who's a double citizen. And so that guy had gone to Italy to do something similar, and his dad had always been supportive. And so he talked to him and asked him if anyone would take me in from the family. And so his dad offered to take me in here in Pasadena. And the other option was I could have gone to Maryland and D.C. to live with his aunt. And I was like, nah, I'm going to go to L.A.
L.A. was a little...
Yeah.
Well, I assume most of Austria has a fairly tough winter. So LA would be a bit appealing.
Oh my God, very different. But I mean, I was at that point, you know, I was always fascinated by Hollywood and movies because it was something so unattainable and unreachable that it was sort of like this figment of my imagination that, you know, I wanted to see, and just LA seemed exciting. And it's like, you know, you grew up in Austria, it's like LA and New York. It's awesome.
Right? Why not? I would assume it'd be a boom.
Yeah, it's very special. So then I came out here and I went to high school at LaSalle in Pasadena for a year, which was great. And I was able to, you know, the Austrian school system is very rigorous. Like, you have a lot of general education, but like, there's not that much space to develop personal interests. And so there I was finally able to do without much pressure things that I wasn't able to do there, like film and TV and choir and musical and drama. And I jumped into things that kind of like stepped out of my like comfort zone a little bit, because I'd never been on a stage. I'd never even wanted to do that, but I was so intrigued by this kind of artistic environment that I wanted to be a part of it. And so I was part of theater and performed, and it was very cool. And I think it just taught me a lot in that way, and fell in love with LA. And while I was there, to kind of figured out where I wanted to go after,
Right. So during that year, you decided not to go back home and to stay out here?
I mean, sort of. I didn't stay out here, actually.
Oh, yeah.
It was more, I knew I didn't want to go back to Austria because I wanted to study in English. I wanted to continue that, and had always loved English. I taught myself during high school how to be better at it. And now that I finally was living in an English-speaking country, I was like, yeah, that sounds kind of cool. I don't want to go back to Austria. But my parents said, you know, the U.S. is a little far, and I was only 18 at the time, and they felt like, I don't even know yet if I can be away from home for that long.
Sure.
And
sure.
So the compromise ended up being London.
Not a bad compromise.
Not a bad compromise at all. And I'd always loved London. I'd visited several summers in a row with friends because it was my favorite city, and still is, actually. And so I started looking for courses in London, slash like the UK in general, but London with a focus, and didn't really know what I was considering, anything from philosophy, politics to language studies and
sure.
film.
Over here, we call it undeclared.
Completely. Yes. Yeah. But that doesn't exist.
Right.
There's no undeclared in Europe.
Yeah. You actually have to declare something.
Yeah, exactly. Which cuts a year off of your bachelor's. You know, you don't have to do 4 years. You just do three. But as I was like reviewing all these lists, I literally was on like colleges that I liked, like looking at all their course lists, like no idea what I want. I was even like, maybe medicine. It's like the wide spectrum, because I've always been interested in everything. And so then I found this course at King's College in London that was called Film Studies. And it just stuck out because film sounded cool. And so I started reading the posting, and basically what it said is it was academia. You know, it was like, film history.
Yeah, film theory, academic study of film.
And in their job description, it mentioned that you learn about history and philosophy and politics and all of these other subjects sort of through the lens of film. And I was like, well, that sounds cool. I can do film, which is just intriguing to me. I have no connection to it, but like always sort of like a gut feeling was like, I want to do this because I can touch upon all these different areas. And so I applied to that. They also had a study abroad program with UCLA, which at that point I'd sort of eyed as a school I wanted to go to at some point, because my host father took me there just as part of like the senior experience of looking at potential colleges. And so I applied to King's College and told my mom I was going to do film studies. She was like, film studies? Like, what are you going to do with that? You know, the classic response, like I was valedictorian. I was always like so studious and academic, and they all thought I was going to be a lawyer, a business person, a medic,
yeah, exactly.
You know,
they saw professional career. Sure.
Yeah, very much so. And I was like, no, I'm going to do film studies. And so I got in there and was very happy and went to King's College for the 3 years. Well, it was fantastic. I learned so much. I think particularly in terms of critical thinking, it really developed my taste. It gave me space to really explore like perspectives that I'd never even come in contact with, being from, you know, the background I'm from. And then I studied abroad at UCLA for 2 quarters. And that kind of led me to production. So I focused a lot of my bachelor's on studies of like representation in film, especially like, you know, minority representation in film. I was doing a lot of feminist film studies, queer studies, racial studies in film. And eventually was like, I know that I don't want to, as much as I am good at writing and all that, but I never quite enjoyed it. And I wanted to go out and change something about it rather than just write about what's out there already. And then I did my study abroad year at UCLA, got right. a chance to work on films for the first time.
So it was really at King's College where the love for film solidified.
Yeah, I think that's where it solidified in a real sort of cinephilic kind of way,
right.
you know?
Right.
Before it was just sort of an emotional, hey, I love films. They move me in some way, but not in any profound sense of like, hey, I'm interested in film history and I need to watch all these classics. Like I was completely out of touch with any of that. I saw, you know, Harry Potter and comedies that just came out and The Devil Wears Prada, like the big, like mainstream movies that actually came from here, from the US over to Europe. And it was less in any sort of art house appreciation for film as an art form kind of sense. And then once I started at King's, that became the focus sort of, and I realized, hey, there's independent film and that's really intriguing to me in terms of like the subject matter. And
And I always think there's something really special about the programs that are film studies more than production.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, cause if it's production only, then people sometimes, not always, but sometimes you can really see something missing in the work.
I would say that I was just thinking as you were saying that, I think what it really taught me is that everything that you see in a film is intentional more than, and you know, you get taught that in a production as well, but I think it never quite sinks in the way when you look at the work once it's done. And the same way you, like, your number one focus when analyzing a film is like, why is this there? What are the themes? What's the filmmaker trying to say? Or what are they not saying that is coming through anyway? And you look at it from a deeper point of view. And I think you carry that forth into production when you come from that background.
Yeah, yeah. And you think more about what you can say.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's, you came out to UCLA and...
Yeah, and that's when I had, you know, for the first time had the chance to be on sets. I was technically an undergrad study abroad student, but was in the film school, became friends with a lot of grad students and started working. I became like the glorified PA on pretty much every single grad student shoot that happened that quarter. And I was like, I loved it. I loved the energy on set. I loved learning about the different positions. I tried myself at casting and ADing and all sorts of different things. It just gave me the space to sort of explore and realize pretty quickly that producing is sort of my main area of interest, because I love like the filmmaking process and the stories and all that, but I don't want to be in front of the camera, and I'm definitely not a writer or a director. Like, I want to be the person who can make it happen for them. Like, I love taking their stories and helping to make them better and realize them. And I, you know, was shadowing a lot of the grad students at the time who were in producing, and just kind of zeroed in on that course. And I was like, I want to go to UCLA for producing.
I have to say, you're a bit of a unicorn. I mean, there are people like yourself, but I've met so many producers, especially at the independent level, who, you know, they're producing because they want to put themselves in film, or they're producing because they want it to lead to something else. There's very few people who really understand producing and that it is an art and that it is, can be a focus, but you completely understood the producer role appealed to you, and you have no hidden agenda. You just want to produce films, which, you know.
Yeah. And I can't tell you how many times in my like career until now, people have asked me, so what do you eventually want to do? Like, do you want to write? Do you want to direct? I'm like, no. I want to produce.
You're like, have you heard of Brian Grazer? Have you heard of, there are producers, there are people whose life mission is to bring great art to the screen.
Yeah, exactly.
As a producer. Yeah.
I get that question all the time. And people just,
it's
even
so
in my
silly
program, because, you know, I eventually did get into the UCLA Producers Program, which, by the way, I think was I like cried when I got in. It was my proudest achievement to date. I was so happy. But, you know, we were eight in my class, and there were a lot of people in it who wanted to be showrunners eventually, or write or do, you know, any of that. They like came to the producers program to get a better sense of, I guess, the business side of it. But there's a lot of multi-hyphenates sort of, and there weren't that many who purely wanted to be producers. But, you know, all of those parts.
So did that mean that, your fellow students, recognized, oh, I want to work with Linda. She's a real producer. Did you meet Kristen at UCLA or no, you didn't?
I'll tell you the story about me, Kristen. Okay. It is a UCLA connection, but not
direct. We
don't
have to jump to it yet. I was just curious because I would assume if someone's aim was to be a writer or director, then you would be like the perfect person to latch on to and say, let's team up, because, you know, it's just so beneficial.
Yeah. I don't know if people quite realize that. Kristen definitely did, but I don't know if they quite realize that school. Because the way the film school is structured, you have the producers program, which is very like development focused. So it's almost more a development executive track with elements in other areas. Then you have the screenwriters program, which is, you know, purely screenwriting. And then you have production, which is often deemed the directing program, but it is technically a program for everything. Like the directors like learn to write, direct, produce, edit, do sound. They do all of it.
Yeah.
And so that's the people we would collaborate with on their films, but because they're also taught to write and produce and direct, they often in that context before they venture out of school sometimes don't quite notice why they need a producer or why they would want a producer to have a creative function. So often in film school, and it depends obviously from director to director, but often as a producer you're kind of like just the logistical mastermind behind the operation rather than a
producer.
True collaborator. Yeah, and because they also, you know, the directors develop their stories as part of classes with their classmates. So as a producer, it's hard to sort of be fully involved in that creative process because there'll be teachers and other students and their close confidants that are all weighing in on this. So I feel like I never quite had the same writer director producer relationship as I have with Kristen while I was still in school. And it is something that did frustrate me at times, but I know where it's coming from. Like, it's not really the students themselves, but, you know. So I don't think at school that really came through, but afterwards definitely did. And I did form relationships with people at school who I still work with on projects now who did see that. But primarily it kind of came after.
Yeah. Did you have to go back to London after your year here, or was this the final year of university?
Yeah, no, I did my two quarters at UCLA to study abroad, and then I went back to London. I finished my last year there, and then that year I applied to the producers program.
Right, producers for graduate.
Yeah, and then I actually was thinking, because the producers program is sort of deemed a more, you know, professional program for people who are a little older, and they usually don't take people straight out of undergrad, I guess. And so my thought was, I'm going to apply, and then I'm probably not going to get in. I'm going to do a year of work experience, take a year off, and then apply again, and then hopefully it'll go through. And then I got in right away, and I did not have a year off.
And were you going to move to Los Angeles no matter what at that point?
No? I probably would have stayed in London for that year if it, you know, because it's hard, like visa-wise. Like, I wouldn't probably have been able to come over here just without the school, but worked out that way.
Yeah.
So I came straight from undergrad.
We don't have the open borders.
Yeah, exactly. And then I came here and did the 2 years of the producers program, and, you know, that kind of set me on my path. I did a lot of internships while I was in it, primarily in development, produced my own projects as well. But the program is very much focused on kind of leading you into an executive track more than being an independent producer right off the gate. So I was following that path and came out and was kind of disillusioned with development, because I felt that I was reading so much stuff that never gets made and never gets the light of day, and felt a little depressing. And so after school, I did a year in sales and distribution. I worked at a company called Participant.
It's a big company.
Yeah, they're fantastic and obviously very suited to what I want to do, because they have this social impact mandate that comes with their films, and they do a lot of activism and campaigning and social capacities in conjunction with their projects, which very much felt like my own brand. So I was there for a year. And then as I was doing that, I got an O-1 artist visa as a producer, which meant I had to leave sales and distribution and participants. And then I worked a year now at Jason Bateman's production company, Aggregate Films. I was an assistant in feature films. And now I'm waiting for my visa to go work at a new production company. And then Excellent. I do my projects on the side.
And you do. So what was the first project that you produced on the side?
Out of school.
Yeah.
Like while working. It was actually a number of music videos for a sort of dark indie pop musician called Saro. He's from LA. It was a collaboration with a director that I met while I was at UCLA, actually during my study abroad years already. So we've now been friends for like since 2014. And this artist had just brought out his like second EP and wanted to do a visual album for it. And so we collaborated on 4 music videos for that, and I continue to make music videos for him. I think it's up to 7 or 8 now. So that one was a big one. And then...
And that's as producer in the role that appeals to you, where you're part of the whole process?
Yeah, that one was... I mean, it was very much led by the creative vision of the artist himself, because he already came in with a lookbook that he wanted to realize. But I was definitely weighing in creatively on that, and sort of just making sure that I think it was a lot of on that one. It was a lot of just mediating what the director wanted, what the DP wanted, what the artist wanted, and sort of finding the creative vision that was like that worked for everyone, and working within the means. And sort of in that role, I was very much like, okay, here's what we have, because we worked on a very small budget and made a lot of things happen on that. It was like, how can we maximize this to fit what we want to do creatively? So it was very much producing in that sense. But it did everything from creative producing to line producing and.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then were there any short films or?
There was, I'm trying to think, feel like there was one in between that I'm not thinking of right now, but there was a short film.
Obviously I'm fishing for when you ran into Kristen.
Yeah, when the film came, of course. Yeah. So that was, I started doing those music videos in December, and that was kind of after school, the first time I had produced. And because I was in sales and distribution and missed the creative sort of fulfillment of making things, that's why I got into that and then continued to do it. And so I had a bunch of music videos. That one short they shot in around April. Then I did a short film for one of my best friends from UCLA who is a writer, and it was her first foray into directing. So we worked on that one. And then shortly thereafter, a professor of mine from UCLA asked me if I would sit down with one of his students from the professional program at UCLA. Her name's Alex. And we met up and we were talking a little bit about what she wants to do and where I'm at. And she was considering some sales distribution field and stuff. But she also told me that she's executive producing a short film, and then reached out a couple of weeks later saying they're looking for a producer for it. And that was the Windphone. And so I at the time had kind of burned out a little bit working full time and also doing projects. And I was sort of... I was like, I'm going to take a break.
The music videos were on the side while you were working full time.
Yeah, all of it was on the side.
Which is really
hard to do. I'd done 5 music videos in the span of like December to April, plus a short film. And so by the time that like Alex came to me with this project, I was just like, I can't take on another. I'm done. But it sounded amazing because it wasn't UCLA related. And I was really hoping to expand my network beyond UCLA. And so I was like, okay, like, let me at least look at it. I don't like saying no without looking at the project at least and giving it a shot, even if I don't have the time. Like sometimes sometimes you find something like the Windphone, and I watched Kristen's first short and was very impressed by it. And
you got sent a script or?
And then I got sent a script and I read it and I loved it right away. And like, I knew I had to do it. Like, I was like, God damn it. I really wanted a time off, but like, I can't say no to this. Like, it was really, I'd actually never had a reaction like that to a short film before, where I read it and I was like, there's no way I can't do this. Like, this is so me. This is so perfect for what I'm trying to do with my work. And I got the chills just reading it with the ending. And yeah. And then, I got introduced to Kristen. I actually, at that point, I hadn't quite made up my mind if I'm really going to do it or not. I was like, I really want to first talk to the director because of, you know, reasons we just discussed, where it's, I hadn't worked with a director or by the director where I felt like I was valued as a creative producer in the role that I really wanted to fulfill. And so I was like, if I take this on and it is an ambitious project, I want to make sure that this director and I are on the same page. And so I was very upfront with her about it. And we completely met in the middle met on the same page sort of with what we wanted from each other. And I didn't quite say yes then either, although I love Chris and we were on the phone for 2 hours. We wouldn't stop talking, which we still don't. I was like, I want to meet you in person before I say yes.
Which only makes sense. I mean, it's such a commitment of time.
Yeah.
And you have to make sure that you get along in person.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think I'd ever been that selective before. It was really because I was just kind of burnt out. And I was like, if I take this on, I need it to be a good experience, and I need it to be a healthy experience for me, because I don't want to do a project that is just gonna run me dry. And so I met with Kristen, and it was like after that it was clear that we were gonna do it, because just all the elements sort of work together, and her approach to a set and to the people she works with is so just mindful and positive, and she values like every person who is in her close surroundings and has sort of that rare balance between knowing exactly what she wants, but not being stubborn about it. So she has a vision, but if you come in and you give her an idea and she thinks your idea is better than hers, then she'll take it. And I think that's very rare. And I do think partly it comes from her never having gone to film school. I think it's almost a benefit.
Right, because she didn't do the full, yeah.
She was never taught how you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
She just takes it from her personal,
yeah,
like, ideals and values of how to treat people.
So in a way, you're almost saying that, especially undergrad production, film school production, almost biases people in a way, or? I don't want to knock it down. Obviously, great.
You know, the program was a master's that I mentioned. I think it's more, and you know, this is not. I just think in film school, it is something that I've observed. I feel like directors often are taught that they need to have. It's almost like a pressure that's put on them too. It's like you need to have this singular vision to stand apart, and you need to be an auteur. And you need, if you don't have that, you're not going to succeed as a director and you're not going to stand out. And I think that comes with a certain pressure as well, where they feel like if I'm not getting my vision through, my project is not going to be good enough. I don't know. That's kind of like
could
a
be,
feeling.
It could be.
I don't want to speak for them because I haven't been in a directing program.
It's also a lack
program.
Of understanding for those people to realize that the best way to achieve that is to collaborate.
Yeah. And I think
way.
Film school sometimes doesn't quite encourage collaboration in the sense that it should. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want to make a generalization about
yeah.
it, but it's just an observation that, like,
yeah,
I have
and
made.
Kristen in particular comes to it,
yeah,
very from a very open place.
Yeah. So just that approach that seemed very, very pure,
mm-hmm.
and different. Just the way she even when we were talking on the phone and the sort of value that she held for those working in her crew, was very appealing to me.
For sure.
And she really carries through.
So yeah. The whole process was, so then it became a pleasant, just a positive process the whole way through?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, like I've worked on a lot of projects at this point, but this one is really the one where my heart is in it the fullest, because I truly have sort of a part of it too creatively. Like I have some sort of ownership over it where I feel like, hey, this film wouldn't be the same if I hadn't been a part of it. And that's a beautiful feeling to know that you collaborated with everyone else on this to make it happen, rather than feeling like I was just the one who put the framework into place where the others could go and make it. It really feels like I was part of it creatively as well. And, you know, there are things that were my suggestions that she totally took and are in there that I can see, hey, this was my idea and it reflected in it and it made it better. And hey, here's something where, oh my God, I'm so glad that she convinced me not to do what I thought was better. So, you know, when I watch that, it just like brings me back to those moments where we collaborated and tried things out and really came together because of that intense creative collaboration.
Yeah.
So when you're saying that we had a really close work relationship, like we did.
Yeah. And it sounds like the two of you were involved the whole way through pre-production, post. You already told me a bit about, you know, the choice of to not have music, that you were involved the whole way. And you were still working full time, or?
Oh, yeah. I've been working full time since I got out of school, and have been doing this. I mean,
she was no longer working as an attorney, I think.
No.
Right? Yeah.
No, she's a full time like writing, directing at this point. But I have been full time working. And I always joke that from the moment that I got the script in front of me, like there has not been a day where I haven't worked on it. It really like consumed my life for a while, but that's where, you know, I realized that if you have a project that you love so much and that you feel like you're truly a part of, like I am willing to give that time for it because I care so deeply about this film and about the people who made it. And I'm so proud of our work, like regardless of where it was going, I was proud of it just for, you know, we talked about it a little bit before, but just for the story itself and what it had to say, like it so deeply reflects like the kinds of movies I want to be making that I just am so happy to do all of it. Like I give away my free time for it because it is my hobby. Like,
yeah, it's a passion project.
It's a total passion project. Yeah. And that's so beautiful to have. And I feel like I had when I read that script the first time, I just had this gut feeling that it was going to take me on a very special journey if I was, you know, going to give into it. And I did. And it's been nothing but that.
Yeah. I don't even have to ask, you know, often when a film comes out beautifully, there's the question of, could you tell something special was happening? But this was special the whole way.
Yeah. And we talk about
so
it all the time.
So you were completely unsurprised that the result was as wonderful as it is.
I mean, sort of. Yeah. I feel like I knew from the beginning that it was going to be. I've never made a short or a project where I knew from the get-go that it was going to be beautiful. Like, regardless of what was going to happen, I knew there was going to be something very special that was going to come out of it. But I think Kristen and I, something we did very consciously from the beginning is as we were in the hiring process, we very much paid attention to people's energy. And the people we hired not just for their skill, but for who they are as people as well, because we felt that this is such a film that is so much about compassion and caring and hope and deep emotions that we wanted to have the people on set who cared about it the same way. We didn't want people just because they're good at their particular job on set.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want a technician who's a brilliant technician who doesn't care about what they're doing.
Exactly. And I think putting that there on the outset and trying to find people who had a positive energy and were there for something more than just a paycheck changed the whole dynamic on set as well, because everyone was willing to go above and beyond for the film, and like more so than I'd seen on any other set. And I think that went a long way. And it's funny because recently, I can't remember who it was, but someone in passing sort of said to me after watching the film was like, "That was a really good set, wasn't it?" And I was like, "Yeah, how did you know that?" And they were like, "Well, I see it in the movie." And I was like, that just kind of blew my mind, because I was like, how do you see that in the movie? But
that's
they just
funny, because that blows
feeling.
My mind too, because I always get that sometimes when there's a warmth between cast members and sort of there's a, I see that more with films with humor in it, that you can tell it was a fun set.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I could have imagined people at the wind phone walking around going, "Oh, this is so sad."
Yeah.
Oh, there were so many deaths. But instead, it's, that's great to hear that someone recognized that.
But yeah, I think no one saw it that way. I think we all saw it as like an important story to tell, because grieving is such a personal process. And I think.
And universal.
Completely universal. And everyone is faced with it at some point in their lives, hopefully later than earlier. But, I think just this idea that that it's very individual and personal, but at the same time communal, that really brought everyone together. And there was this weird thing where the booth, and I'm sure Kristen talked about this too, but this booth just had this energy. It's really strange. Like you stepped into it and there was this beautiful ocean view and there's nothing much around you. And you could hear the wind like going through the booth because the top was open. And so it just had this like energy, like if you stepped into it, all of a sudden everything was quiet and it was very contemplative. And it's just this weird experience. Like you went into it and it was almost spiritual in itself. And it was like, that too, I think got people where it was like, wow.
And that's so appropriate. That's so appropriate for the, I mean, we're not, and of course, People who hear this will not get the chance to watch the film because it's not going to be online yet at all.
Yeah.
But the idea that they were stepping into a special space, I mean, it's about a special space. I mean, we can sort of talk about it because, like Kristen, I had heard the NPR story mm-hmm. and the people in real life who use the real life wind phone, it became a sacred place. It's a sacred thing. So you recreated something sacred and it worked.
Exactly. And that's, I think, you know, it's just beautiful and somehow unexpected that we were able to recreate the feeling of that place as well, especially for the actors. I think it really informed their performances. They all talked about it, like individually of each other. Like we have done cast interviews with them and they all bring this up as something where, you know, they all knew their characters and they knew their characters very deeply because Kristen had worked with them on workshopping sort of the emotional reality of who their characters are. But they all said that the moment they stepped into that booth, like they became their characters, like they really found them without much rehearsal or anything. And
And as Japanese Americans, I wonder if they even felt like they were transported back home to Japan in a way.
I mean, they're actually all, they're not even Japanese Americans. Right. They're actually all Japanese
and
native
born,
Japanese.
Yes.
Yeah. Which also, you know, was very special somehow because they have all come from Japan and still have a lot of family over there and friends and had people affected. And yeah, except for the little one, she's Japanese American. but yeah, it was a beautiful set. And
wonderful,
process.
Wonderful. And it sounds like the process was wonderful the whole way through post. And then when you completed it, what came next for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was involved from the beginning, like all the way. Like we did casting together. We, you know, initiated all together, obviously through post as well. Kristen and the editor did a couple rounds of editing, just the two of them. Primarily because I was out of town as well. And then we sort of fine-tuned it together. And it was a very long editing process because we realized that it was going to be a very delicate balance between the stillnesses and like how long, like the contemplative periods. And so that doesn't drag, but also feels like you're giving space to thought. And we did a lot of like just tweaking and finding sort of the symbolism and when to cut to the sky, when to give you a breather, when to be in there deep with the people. Like it was a really, really long editing process. And then we had a little bit of like, do we use music? Do we not? Like we already talked about that. And we had a composer already working on it. And then we were like, oh, you know what? It's actually not working. Like, sorry, but we're just going to do sound design. And then that was a bit of a process. So the post process dragged out for quite a little bit because we wanted to make sure we get it perfectly, like, and that we both feel happy with it. And then, I mean, we started submitting to festivals, like with an early cut, you know, Sundance was the first one in September, and then just kind of like rolled it out from there. And it was pretty smooth. We always like throughout this process, sort of the word serendipity kind of became my favorite word because there's a lot of things that just kind of fell into place for it. And synergy too. We talked a lot about weird, like synergetic energies that just worked out. Like even on set with the way that the weather turned and the clouds and the light, and it just basically the lighting, natural lighting and the weather changed with our scenes. It was almost like we programmed it. It was really strange and cool and awesome to see. But in the end, you know,
had a very good one, I think. From what I've seen.
Yeah. No, it's been great.
And you were you were finalists in an Oscar qualifying, and
yeah, and there was so much.
And you got where you needed to be, which is in consideration, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, successfully submitted for consideration, I would say.
Yeah.
We don't want to jump the gun or anything.
No, gun jumping.
We're in there, and we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, if there was ever a film that I would expect to have Oscar consideration, it's The Wind Phone. It's just,
aww,
you know, which
thank
is
you
not
so
to
much.
Say that there's many films I love that I would like to say that about, but The Wind Phone has so much more going for it.
Yeah,
in a way, you know, it's just so, it's a very special work of art.
Thank you. Really means a lot. I sometimes wonder why we didn't play it more, like bigger festivals, like why it was rejected from some, especially in Europe. I feel like there's a bit more of like the sensibility of it is a little more, feels a little more European almost, but
yeah,
no,
I am shocked that it wasn't accepted by 90% of festivals. Yeah. I don't understand.
Kind
other
of
festivals.
The opposite way, like the other way around, sort of rejection from 90% of the big ones. But
I am shocked.
I'm wondering sometimes if people took the time to watch it fully, because you know it's slow in the beginning, and I think the real power of it comes by watching it all the way through.
And the runtime is
like 16 minutes.
Sometimes I wonder if there's big festivals that like want 12 minutes or less or something like that. Like if they just want to churn them over.
Yeah. So I do think that it's not, those rejections are not purely on people having watched it and being like, nah, that's not good enough. I think there's a lot of factors that probably played into it.
Yeah. I mean, I have no idea how other festivals work.
Yeah. Me neither. I mean, it's just, it's
ours
pure
is so
speculation.
Simple. Like a handful of people, of jury members watch and they all rate it 1 to 10 and then we average out ratings and
yeah.
I can't promise it, but I think you had a perfect 10. I mean, who wouldn't give that a 10? My God.
Aww. Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, it's lovely. For me, it's not about big festivals and big accolades. Like for me, it's really, I'm so proud of it. And when I hear people like you, where you're saying it so resonated with me, like that's beautiful, you know, getting this positive feedback. Like also even like Indie Shorts was one festival where they just loved it. Like you could feel it. Like Greg Sorvig was one of the programmers there. And now I think took it over as director or something like that. But he's wonderful and had so much support for it that came from a really pure place. Like that's what to me really matters. And being able to show it to a large number of people. That's why it's so exciting for us to have a chance now to show it to industry insiders and to get such like support and positive feedback from them. That's really amazing. And I hope that, you know, these actors are like, all of them are so incredibly talented. We found them on a random acting online platform. Like they just submitted, it was a free posting on like LA casting or something like that. And we got these incredibly talented actors who are absolutely underemployed. And I just hope that it can like lead to some
unbelievably underemployed. Yeah.
One of our most, like one of the strongest in it, Hitoshi, who plays Rayo, the farmer, he just got like one of the first projects since that. And it's mind blowing to me. He's such a strong actor. And so I hope that it'll give a platform to the actors as well. Like I think that's why we're trying to bring them out whenever we can as well. And yeah, kind of promote them through it.
The Asian representation in film is, in American film, I should say, is really, really a blind spot.
Yeah.
That we could probably talk about for a while.
Absolutely.
I have good friends who are Asian in this business, and it's a weird place to be because the racial divide in this country is so identified as black and white.
Yeah.
And there's Latin Americans and Asian Americans. There's a lot of Americans who are sitting there going, it's not, there's more to it than that.
Yeah.
And
completely.
Yeah, breaks my heart.
Yeah. I think we're seeing a little more of at least like conversations about it now, and it's getting a little better, like tiny steps.
And
like,
Ali Wong got to make a rom-com, right? So
yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Crazy Rich Asians, shout out to a new company.
And that was Linda Christina Riedman. I have to tell you, she absolutely blew me away with how cool she is and how unique. You know, when you're dealing with independent film and the kind of films that are on the festival circuit, there's not too many pure film producers. There's a lot of people who produce films because they want to do something else. And I think Linda's purity as a producer is definitely one of the reasons why The Wind Phone really just came out about as beautifully as a film can. Oh my God, I keep talking about The Wind Phone and you still can't see it. Too bad for you. You should have been at the screening at Film Invasion LA in 2019. It was superb. Okay, so let me just do the house cleaning. Discover Indie Film is this podcast where I interview filmmakers from the festival circuit, and it's also a TV series on Amazon Prime Video. So just go to Amazon Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film, and watch amazingly good short films. And if you go to discoverindiefilm.com, there are many shorts and interviews there. There's also links to great feature films whose makers I've interviewed. If social media is your thing, at DIF Wins is how you find Discover Indie Film on all the platforms that we're on. I think it's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And the last thing I'm always supposed to mention is Film Invasion Los Angeles is currently accepting films for the 2020 festival, as is the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. Film Invasion LA comes up every June. Sherman Oaks Film Festival comes up every November. You can look both those up on social media or their websites. Film Invasion LA is at Film Invasion LA or filminvasionla.com. Sherman Oaks Film Festival is at Sherman Oaks FF or shermanoaksff.com. All right. Thanks for listening.